Welcome, Poggers, to the first episode of Season 2 of the Pog State for 2021. It is summer. It's incredibly hot. Thankfully, we're here in Lowell Park. We have ourselves an air conditioner, and everything is going to be all right. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get in before the season started. However, this does mean that a few of the teams have already played. We also get to talk about some of the sweet moments that we've already had from our first few days of LCK summer, and we get to eat some sweet Pog snacks. And the biggest change that we have for this season is that it's not me by myself in my house feeling weird and uncomfortable doing most of these intros. I now get to be here with all of my co-casters. So allow me to introduce good old Wolf, good old Valdez, and the Chronicalizer up there at the end. And every episode, it'll be four of us. I don't know whether we're going to be here every time. I'm hoping that we can possibly have, you know, episodes done by a river or something like that. Or what in the bathroom, which has been an aim for us for many, many years. Many, many years. I know if you're a long-time watcher, these guys are having a giggle.
That's an old
But you guys know, man. You guys know that we do owe you an episode that is in the bathroom. So without further ado, gentlemen, how's the off-season been? And how is things after MSI? I guess I have to ask which person's going to talk first. So, Wolf, you first.
I don't know. I just want to keep going on the bathroom thing. You know, I was thinking about it because we actually have the players in the studio now. I run into them in the bathroom a lot, and that's always been like a thing in esports. And it's funny because people always think about like what happens in the locker room and like, is there ever any trash talk between the players? Like, do they run into each other in the hall? And like, the place where everybody meets up between games is actually the bathroom, and not just in Korean esports, but actually in esports across the world. And I don't know, when you thought about that, I was like, yeah, I mean, a lot happens, you know, in esports bathrooms. But I've been good.
Sweet segue. Like,
yeah, you know, I'm dieting a little bit. I dieted a little bit the end of the off season, so it's a hard time to diet when you're working, but trying to lose a little bit of weight and look better for you guys on camera, so it's going all right.
I'm doing the same thing, Wolf, and it's quite difficult, you know. Haven't seen too many results just yet. However, working hard, bought a bike, you know. You got to make steps like this, you know, getting out of the house and doing stuff. How about this end of the table? Dieting a little bit less necessary. What have we been up to?
Yeah, I feel like I have to grow in the opposite direction. Maybe I need to diet with eating a lot of food.
Maybe we all just need to go to the hospital and have like a fat transition situation.
Yeah, we can just trade,
you know, yeah.
Kind of balance it out.
Yeah, that'd be great. I got plenty for everyone.
Some equalizing, yeah. I'm all there for it.
The equalizer.
Yeah. Is that a Whippo reference from last night?
I mean, possibly.
We do have to talk about that. The fact that everything started all across the world. We've got LEC bumping off at the same time. All of those roster trades. And we've had none, really. No swaps of roles or anything like that. Do you think the Korea just didn't get the memo? Like, what is it, boys? Because going through, we've had all of the teams play now. We haven't really had that much of a change-up outside of Bay moving down to challenges.
Yeah, there were three metas, right? There was the NA meta, where you take your best-performing player and bench him. Then there was the LFBL meta, which is just like regular roster swaps.
Yep.
And then we had the LEC meta, where everyone went to an off-roll, and every jungle is now auto-filled.
Yep.
So we just didn't do any of it, basically. We just were like, nope, none of
the
these
Korean meta,
pseudos.
The Korean meta of... don't spend money to improve your roster. Wait a minute, we'll just wait and see if it gets better, which actually in the past has worked pretty well, but it takes a pretty long time to actually solidify this roster. So I'm a little bit worried that we didn't have that many changes, to be honest. I expected a lot more. I was hoping for a lot more.
Do we think that maybe this has something to do with the fact that we've just started franchising and there has been like, at the beginning of this year, there was a huge shift in not only the teams and the rosters, but the infrastructure behind them and all the things that sort of go on there. And maybe that means that this is sort of let's find our footing and stability during the summer season and try and make sure that we can get everything, you know, the well-oiled machine. And then maybe 2022 is where it all hits the fan and we're forking out all the money for the sweet rosters.
I think there's definitely an element of if you change a roster too much in the beginning of franchising, your team loses its identity. And one of the strengths of franchising, of course, is that you can't get relegated, right? You're going to be in the tournament no matter what. And a team like Fred at Brion has already kind of like solidified their identity in the first season, right? Underdogs, they're actually the one of the teams you want to root for. Like, that's kind of the
Do
dream.
Do you want an identity as an underdog, though?
I think like because they were always going to be underdogs, I think that the fact that they've already gotten people to rally behind them, even though they're a weaker team,
true.
Is like, it's kind of the dream for a new roster roster that's a fairly cheap roster, right, that you put together. You're kind of, everybody's already thinking you're 10th place. If you're Frédéric Brion, I think you're very happy with how quickly you've gotten fans and everything's just kind of coming along. And I think if you're, especially if you're Frédéric Brion, a lot of people might go, well, I should have bought better players. Like, they were one of the weaker teams. But if you're Frédéric Brion, I understand, like, you want to kind of like keep rolling with this roster, see where you can go. If you're an org like KT Rolster, on the other hand, that's had fans for, you know, over a decade, maybe make some changes.
you want to talk about the logo as well, Wolf? I feel like we haven't gone enough.
We can talk about that at another time.
I do want to say, though, there's two types of underdogs, right? There's the one that you come in and they're like, they're just never going to win. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, this just feels bad. They're going to get crushed again. And then there's Frédéric Brion, a team that actually is an underdog that you can root for because sometimes they do win, even if they get 10th place.
Yeah,
they'll win against the big teams, and that creates an exciting moment, whereas the other bottom teams are just like,
It's interesting, though. I like to think of it as, like, I don't know which year it was specifically, but it's the difference between Jynner and Kongdu Monster.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Right? Like, everyone loves Jynner, you know, there's like the glad plane. They don't win very often, but when they do, it's 92 minutes against SKT, and it's like really, really fun. Mm-hmm. Whereas Kongdu Monster just lost all the time, and it just wasn't very fun. And when they won, everyone was disappointed about the other team not performing very well, and it was like,
because that was the only time they won.
That was basically it. Yeah, it was it was not great. Whereas somehow Jynner managed to be pretty bad for most of the time, but still so lovable for absolutely forever. Maybe this is like the legacy of Monte Cristo coming out and him and Doa always talking up the glad plane forever, and then that mantle being carried for forever, and, you know, people like Wolf having Jynner posters in their background and the fact that Jynner is such a storied org in esports. There are a lot of things that do help that out, but I think that Frédéric Brion's going the Jynner direction instead of the Kongdu direction.
Definitely feels that way.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely good. If we had a Kongdu in the LCK Chronicler, who would it be? Oh, that's a bit too
that felt personal, actually.
That's a harsh one, but like I feel like Afrika is like, because they're a storied org, right? They still have a lot of fans, so it's not really the same. But I think if Afrika has a few more years where it really doesn't come together and they keep underperforming, they might get there eventually. But I don't think right now we have any team that's there.
I mean, Afrika did just beat our Jynner.
Yeah, they did.
Did anyone beat anyone in that series is the real question. But, you know, we could talk about that some other time.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I do want to go back to the roster changes. And Wolf's said a bit of his piece. But I wanted to talk to you about it and ask, like, what do you think about how many changes the LCK made? And are you a little bit worried? Or are you thinking that it's probably going to be fine to solidify rosters instead?
I mean, to be honest, watching Challengers, like, you know, these teams are very already invested in, like, their two big teams, basically, Challengers. And, you know, they're not really looking to spend any more money, I think, this year. So I think it's okay for this year. If nothing changes again for, like, the next couple of years and nobody's spending money or trying to develop talent, that'll be worrying. You know, I know that T1 got a lot of flack for Spring, but I actually like what they did. Because honestly, Spring doesn't matter all that much, right? Everybody's trying to gear up for summer, trying to win summer, get all the points, and be ready to go in time for Worlds. And I think the experimentation was good. And I think just unfortunately, they're one of the only teams that can really do that right now with the huge pool of talent that they have. Because, you know, other teams have 10-man rosters, but it's not like T1's 10-man roster.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit difficult, and we had this discussion. If you guys watched our pre-show, we did one just hanging out at my house, and it wasn't as good as this, and so we're never gonna do anything without James ever again. However, we did have a large discussion about, you know, where talent's going, and is it worth having like such a good academy team, and the fact that you then have subs on your main roster as well. So technically, like, all of our organizations can have four full teams to play League of Legends together. It's like that old...
I think it's almost four. I think it's eight is the limit for Academy. So I think you can have 10 on the main and then eight on your Academy. So it's like eight team players, I think, total, if I'm not
mistaken. So if you've got two coaches that are former players, you could actually have like a four-team round-robin scrim situation, much like what we were talking about with the Freak of Freaks many years ago, right? When they had their Uber roster and there were just so many players on the team and they were doing a lot of in-house scrims and people just couldn't get information on Afrika at all.
Yeah, I mean, and like Spirit would come out and he'd play something ridiculous, and me and Papa would be on the desk, or Valdez and Papa would be on the desk, because I think it was the time where it was only Papa that was the color caster.
Yeah.
But we'd just be like, well, I guess we'll just find out. I don't know. Flip a coin, see what's going to happen.
There
no
were a lot of sister
possible.
Teams, too, in the history of League of Legends as well. And during the time with Samsung and MVP had two teams for a while. They obviously kind of
Azubu.
Became Samsung. Azubu, you know, Najin, T1, KT. There were a lot of sister teams, right?
Yep.
Because, you know, there was a tournament called Masters that it was very, very brief period of time in League of Legends where you would run two rosters and kind of like swap players in and out. And that's kind of been like the way the best teams in Korea were for a really long time. And then, you know, that kind of got there was a rule change, so you couldn't do that anymore. You only had to have one team, or you're only allowed to have one team. So I think there's still some, like, it feels like holdover from that period of time on a lot of teams. Like T1, it really feels like they want to have two teams, like no matter what, basically, in their house. And I think it can lead to great success for those teams. But it does mean if you have like two teams that could be in the top four in the LCK, that some of that talent isn't spread around. So
you could even argue three, because LCK Challengers team is also probably like up there with some of the mid-tier, bottom tier.
Yeah, they're pretty like sixth place in the LCK.
Because I've started looking more into challenges, right? And like, it's not good. As in, no one even comes remotely close to that team. They've like stomped it last play as well. It's insane.
Yeah, they're super, super good.
A lot of depth.
And there's also like, because Challenger has now become, it's not like it used to be, right? It was all sorts of different teams that would then possibly promote into the LCK. That's how we had teams like Griffin, teams like Sandbox making their way up. And now, when you're an org that's in the LCK, you need to have an extra team. So that's a lot of, that's where a lot of the infrastructure and where a lot of the energy for our teams has gone this year, is getting all of that sorted out. So I'm thinking that also takes away from our expectation of needing to make massive roster changes. So I feel like that whole conversation that's gone on for about 10 minutes is one giant caveat for what we're about to talk about, which is what actually did change, right? And I think if we're talking about roster changes, the one change that I think has been the most impactful is going to be on Nongshim Red Force, right? Gari moving into that mid lane had a bit of a shocker in his first game, and then proceeded to pop off. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I think Gori making his way onto that roster. I think Blank coming back as well.
Those are
like the two
yep.
big ones that I think everybody can kind of get behind and say, this is looking good, you know. We'll see about KT, but I still think it's good on paper.
Hey, it was a good start. It was a good start for KT. I'll give him that.
We saw game one, and it was like, oh, okay. And then it was the usual KT loop of going, oh, never mind. Need to kind of temper the expectations. But yeah. Nongshim is an interesting team because it felt like there were a lot of components that could work really well, but also a lot of liabilities on that team. Even if we look at the games that have already played, like Rich, for example,
I think you're exactly right. I think what we already have, the tape that we already have in front of us for what Nongshim provided, yes, they won 2-1, but yeah, it weren't pretty.
But I was happy to see Gori already develop a little bit within that split, and I'm really interested to see where this team can go. I think if Peanut can kind of let go of his flipping habits that are no longer necessary, because he should now have a more stable mid laner, hopefully Nongshim can actually become one of the more consistent teams, because I think that what we've, and this of course might change as we get deeper into the split, but I hope that these roster changes just mean that some of our teams that are sometimes good but generally not are now consistently good, right? That's what we really want to see, I think.
No, I agree entirely, and I think consistency has always been key, but something that we've also slowly lost over the seasons. And I think, like, for me, the death of consistency, or true consistency, I guess it was reborn a little bit in Damwon before they went off to MSI, which we'd prefer not to talk about. But they also did very well. I mean, five games in the final, still got us a fourth slot at Worlds. So you guys did your job. Absolutely fantastic. Would have been cool if you won, but we don't mind. We don't care. It doesn't really mean anything.
We've just kind of been avoiding the topic a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Straight up.
This episode is not about that, you know?
I think Ian's going to need to, like, edit in, like, a giant elephant in the room for, like, the first half of the show before we talk about this. Yeah, yeah. Just
I think the elephant in the room, like, actually has an LPL logo on it. It's, like, floating in the corner.
But, yeah, we can address it. But, I mean, I think that we want to look to the future a little bit as well. And I am proud of Dawn One and what they did. I think they didn't perform to the level that we knew they could. However, I also think that the competition was really fierce. I think that RNG overperformed for what expectations were for them. Expectations were high, and they still absolutely smashed it, played extraordinarily well. So that's extremely impressive. And I think that there's a lot for us to be proud of Dawn One and what they accomplished. But you can't, you know, like, I'm remembering back to things like, you know, 2015, where the MSI final was, like, super close and really awesome, and EDG walks away with the win. If you're an SKT fan at that point, you're not upset, right? You got a final that went the distance, and it's been a long time since we've had a five-game final at Worlds or MSI.
True.
You know?
We just got to wait until Fred and Brian make it to Worlds, and then we're going to have our true performance, our true LCK pop-off when they win Worlds.
Oh, this meme's and never going to die, is it?
I don't know why you don't believe in King Umpty,
I believe in King Umpty. I don't believe in King Umpty going to Worlds nor winning the title.
You just don't know whether it's going to be...
But I just don't think it's that funny either.
Is it King T or Inti, though, you know? Like, which one do you get each day? Because
usually not
Inti
recently, you know? He's been all right.
I mean, Lava's just going to carry them. He's Lava the one who said it, right? He's the one who's like, I'm looking higher than the LCK. I want to go to Worlds. Like, now with four seeds, I think we can do it. I'm like, we'll see about that.
He's like, maybe I'll be the 11th player on T1, and they'll sign me again, and I'll make it through this time.
Oh, damn. We need a Freaker to get in as well, and then the World Final needs to be Bro AF. That's what it needs to be. Oh,
that's a dream.
A girl can dream. A Freaker, another team that that we could talk about. They made a little bit of a change. Leo came in, former substitute to Bang, and now is substituting for Bang yet again.
Yeah,
which is kind of cute. It was in 2018, I believe. So, the dark ages of the SKT. But
true. No, it's true.
It was.
Yeah, no, I didn't know you were going to say SKT. I'm like, what is he talking about? Why is it the dark ages of the LCK?
But, like, you know, they were, you know, Leo was sitting behind Bang during a time that was a little bit rough, and now it's another time of sort of rebuilding and things like that. And Leo did actually debut for the team. You guys had the pleasure of casting him. How did you feel he went? Because game one, not super great, but then managed to win a couple.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I think that the Leo performance was just, it was solid. It wasn't like groundbreakingly good. It wasn't bad. He was just consistent. And if you have Keen in your top lane, a consistent bot lane is generally great because, you know, I think Leo's performance was solid, but it's not what you look at when you look. There's a reason why Keen got both POGs. It was very deserved. And if Dread turns on it, you know, again, and this team can actually maintain consistency past 25 minutes, like they actually did in this first series, it's really interesting. If it's going to be enough, it remains to be seen. I think Afrika has shown us these moments, and like with Fred Abrion, who in the first game looked like Fred Abrion from the first series, and then in the second and third game looked like Fred Abrion the entire spring split, it's a bit of a TBD.
I remember in our Casta group chat, I think it was like halfway through the draft in game two, I'm like, easiest 2-0 or something like that. And I think Wolf made a comment like, I reckon Afrika wins this. And I'm like, you've got to be joking.
Didn't go either way we expected, I don't think.
No.
What was that before or after the Gwen lock? That's the big question.
It was halfway through the draft, but it was still like after I was like, nah, it's just going to be totally fine, man. This team's leveled up. And then it didn't really work out. So still a few more things to iron out there. And I guess, are there any other like rostered swaps that we really want to talk about? You mentioned Blank coming back, but we already saw him first half of spring. So it's not the hugest of deal. Yukal's still on the roster and still technically first mid laner, but it was Dove that was playing, so I expect that we're going to be seeing Yukal as well. Are there any others that stand out in your mind?
T1's kind of saying that they've solidified their roster, I think it's not really a roster change per se, but like they are running the roster they found success with at the very end of spring. Danny said that they're going to keep using it. I know we talked about this in our unofficial episode a lot, but I think it's important to note if you're a fan who's kind of trying to catch up right now, T1 has kind of picked their five-man roster. It's going to be the main one that we saw, and like it looked good so far. You know, it was a very close series against Damwon last night, and I think that T1 actually might end up making the finals this season. They look really good. They look very coordinated. There are specific champions that can be played by closer, for example, in this meta. I feel like it's a really good meta to be an assassin-type player in the mid lane, to be a flex like closer can be. So he might come in every now and then. But T1, I think, have a lot of potential now that they're not kind of playing musical chairs with their roster anymore. And I think that's really important for them going forward.
I think, personally, I don't know if this is a spicy take, but I saw Kana playing a couple of days ago, and I really was not impressed. Or not, it was yesterday.
Yeah,
they've solidified their roster, and Kana can be a great player at times, but yesterday that was a big flop, and he showed a lot of that flopping in spring as well. I think if there's one role for T1 to look at, potentially mixing around, I think it would be the top lane.
I think Zeus is actually really good, too.
Just literally, especially with him behind him.
The rest of the roster, keep it as is. Kuz, I think, played incredibly. I think he's one of the best Rumbles.
I know he's the best Rumble in the world. He's yeah. so good.
I think Kuz gets a lot of unjust criticism for T1 for some reason. You know, the Kuz Liger memes have just stick around a little bit too long, but he played super well. Legit, if Kana keeps like missing everything on Gnar, swap in Zeus, don't change anything else. Keep Faker, Teddy and Carrier are playing super well, right? Just do that. And then if you want to try that, outside of that, I really wouldn't change anything at the moment.
Yeah, because Kana has some really insane high highs. I mean, we've seen them where he's like solo killing people. I remember that Aurelia game. I'm like, man, this guy's insane. But then the next game, it's like, what happened? You know, he just totally flops, and you need something consistent, and I think they're lacking that probably with Zeus as well. So like, even though they're both really talented, it's kind of hard who you choose. And I guess with Kana having more experience, you go with him like first and foremost. But I do agree with
what do you guys think though about, like, is it easier to fix Kana, or is it easier to like swap somebody else in when you've already kind of committed to this roster, and then try to make sure Zeus can actually play up to the same potential? It feels like to me fixing Kana, because we know he has those insane high highs, is probably easier than being like, well, he had two like kind of okay games, might as well give Zeus a shot, because then we're kind of going back to where we were before. I feel like
I kind of disagree. I think that because of the fact that spring happened, right, and you've had all of this experimentation and you've put people on the stage together and actually proven that this does work in a live setting, actually in a game, I think what that's done is set up T1 to actually have the ability to make small adjustments, right, and not be too worried about it, because they actually have solid proof that this can work technically, you know,
I think what we learned though was that it didn't work, right? Like, it didn't work in terms of the flexing. It worked in terms of solidifying the roster.
Played pretty good.
If you go back,
he needs more time with the main roster. Not with like Wanner in the jungle and like all this crazy swapping around. Like, give Zeus a lot of time with the main roster and like swap them out one by one. Like Max was saying, like little adjustments I think would be a lot better for the team now in summer spring.
I think we should move on. But if you like go back, watch yesterday's performance by Kana on Gnar, and then go back to Zeus's first competitive game ever where he played Gnar as well.
Yeah,
like I can guarantee you will see what I'm like. Give Kana two more weeks, I think that's completely fine. See if he can get up to form, but if he doesn't, only swap Zeus and ride that till hopefully a good playoffs position.
Yeah, and it's a little bit recency bias as well, because he made Morgan look like a pretty average player in their first match. So one series,
Khan, right? Like,
the thing is, like, it's one series, and it was Khan probably having one of the best mechanical performances that I've seen from him in like at least 24 months. Like, it was crazy. And I think that is bridging us pretty beautifully to talk about our you know, current world champions and runners up at MSI, Damwon, a team that's difficult to talk about based on our feelings about MSI and things like this, and, you know, going in with obviously the expectation that they would prove that they were the best team in the world, you know, because we are very proud about LCK. But I think that it was a fun series, but it felt to me, and I'm gonna quote something that I think that I typed to you guys. It was a lot of really sweet mechanics with only one player actually trying to win, and that was Carrier.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, I think because we talked about this yesterday, my takeaway from this series was that we still see the same mistakes in Don Monkia, but they're getting less pronounced, which was Beryl and Ghost getting bot gapped. Ghost himself said, like, at the end of the game, like, bot gapped. What he knew, they were getting demolished, right?
Yeah.
But it was less volatile. It was less extreme than what we saw at MSI. Outside of, I think, the third game, but like Beryl as a whole was a lot more consistent in that series. Mm-hmm. And we still saw Khan overextending once or twice, although he did also have like insane pop-off performances. And for T1, it's very clear that this roster can stand up, but they're not there yet to Don Monkia. And I think that's perfectly fine to be at that position at this point in the split.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like it might sound like BM what I said, but to add a little bit of explanation to what it means. It means that it's the first game that these teams have played together during the regular season. It means that there's not a lot of pressure. And you could tell that they were feeling each other out, right? Like, these were two teams that were trying to push buttons everywhere. That's why there were just fights exploding all across the Rift, right? And I think that's a large reason why it went to three games at the same time. And I think that it's really cool, the fact that I don't think we've seen the ceiling for this matchup yet.
Yeah.
And, you guys had a really good point. Like, why don't we just stay for another few games, you know? Like, let's see what happens if this one goes to five.
Easy peasy.
It's really reminiscent of when they fought each other early on in the spring season as well.
Yeah, right.
Very early on, and it was a really close series. Went to three games. And it's another of those moments where I think people look at the matchup, and it's very exciting for the fans, right? No matter what. No matter what the result is, it's going to be a good game. You're going to see some high-level mechanics. It's going to be awesome. But, like, this is not the series you judge power levels based on. You don't go after the series and go, well, that's it. I guess it is in a one-region.
One-team region.
Because, you know, T1, they were the only ones who could have done it, and they lost the best of three, so therefore, which is what I saw, like, most of the internet doing all last night. But, you know, it's
that
actually...
And complaining about the draft.
There was some draft issues. But like, I think that series alone doesn't actually tell us which is the strongest team in LCK yet. It just shows us who won that first best of three after Dom1 just finished quarantine, just like got out of quarantine, went to the studio, sat down at the booth for the first time in so long here in the LCK studio at LoL Park, and played a game against T1. Like, it was a very, very unique, specific one regular season game, and I think drawing too many conclusions based off of this game is a bad idea. It's dangerous.
Yeah, and also if you're drawing those conclusions and blaming things like draft and stuff like that, well, they're not going to be drafting this meta at the end of the season, right? So actually all of those are a little bit moot when it comes to that. I actually really like that they were testing the teamwork, that they were trying to test, like, how far can we push the machine that we've been oiling this entire offseason.
I think they're just testing Carrier.
Yeah.
Well, see, I like mean, that. He paused. In my opinion, he paused.
If the other four players do not play well, can you just carry us?
They're trying to make him go Super Saiyan. That body slam on Beryl is still replaying in my brain. That body slam from the... Oh, my God.
You know, a normal person would see that that Kalista prior and be like, oh, yeah, of course. You know, Teddy's an insanely strong Kalista, really good team fighting, or lane pressure. But the real smart people know the only reason he does that is that so Carrier can go harder. And then he can pull him out and go back.
And Mata taught Teddy about this a really long time ago, you know? Like...
Beryl, I feel like my biggest takeaway from that series was Beryl is the same. Clutch late game team fighting, great initiator, great
pretty
on the rally.
Pretty good at cows.
In the lane, it's going to be a bad time. Like, we still haven't fixed those issues. Like, slow down in the lane, Beryl.
I think it's a lot better. I think the third game was like peak MSI Beryl. Yeah. No. Like, the third game was peak MSI Beryl, but I think in game number one and two, he did show a lot of improvement based on MSI form. Like, clearly he's not where he used to be, not even remotely, outside of, as you pointed out, the late game scenario. But I also think that Carrier is, in my opinion, like the strongest player on T1 and the strongest support in the league at the moment. And I think those first two games were more of an indication to where Don Monkia is going to develop Beryl, where as long as Ghost and Beryl are not a liability in lane, which at the moment they kind of are, I think they're going back to that again, which is great because then the rest of the team will clearly carry them.
Yeah, and I guess we don't really need to talk about Showmaker being really good. He's still really good.
He did get caught that one time.
That's true. Oh. And he did also get put on karma duty, which I think is going to take us to our next section, which is a version of the Pog moments that that our friend Valdez has so beautifully carried us through during the spring season. But now we're going to do it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Pog moment for this particular episode is actually just going to be one champion. I think it's going to be who did it better on Akali. Pog moment, let's do it. Akali was definitely one of the front runners when it came to picking up Pog points. So I guess let's work out who it is that managed to do it the best. One player did manage to get a pentakill. It was the Lolking Lava. He was absolutely fantastic. But was he the best Akali? No. This week. No. Who was Valdez? No, who was?
Calm was the best Akali. His mechanics on the champion, I think, were the best out of all the Akali players. And he was the most flashy. He certainly had a lot of help from Beryl, who basically had two games within one game. One where he was inting for 15 minutes and one where he was carrying for the other 15.
The usual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just Beryl things. But yeah, I was most impressed by Khan.
I think Khan was absolutely outstanding. I want to add to that just a little bit, and the fact that Khan is playing on a team with Showmaker, who was probably the most outstanding Akali player like a year ago.
Yeah.
And Akali was like permanently banned against him. Akali got nerfed and then was still basically always banned against him because Showmaker was so damn good at the champion. And then Khan says, "No, you play Karma this game. I'll take care of it." And he absolutely did. And
some people thought he was a player of the game worthy Karma as well that game.
Yeah, I mean,
I stand by that decision.
I feel like we ridiculed Chronicler enough.
it's fine. I stand by the decision. If you go back to the game and you look at which player has the biggest impact, yes, Khan is the flashiest, but
Koma told them to pick Karma, so he gets the Pog vote from Chronicler, I guess. Yes, he also did survive in some pretty amazing scenarios. However, if you have the lens of cool flashiness and also the fact that they were behind in Khan's energy, you know, being able to get in there.
Oh, I love
keep
Khan.
His spirits up. Yeah. And kill both carries in one ultimate. Like, that was some pretty clean stuff.
By the way, I did think that draft was pretty excellent from Damwon as well.
Yeah?
For game three. Like, you know, you mentioned the fact that Khan played Akali instead of Showmaker. We were fooled as well. We were like, oh, okay, so Khan's going to play Karma top. No. They just swap it. And to have that ability is really cool. And to play it to that level as well.
Yeah, and you guys actually mentioned it pretty excellently on the broadcast as well, which was when they were picking the Akali, it was like giving Khan the massage, you know, like I feel like they were always planning on doing it from that moment on, but I like the mind games that were being played at the same time. Those first two team fights from him were just fantastic. And I was watching the game and I was thinking, all right, game two is the anomaly. You know, I think that, you know, T1 might be able to just come back and take the series. And then Khan's like, nah, mate. No.
Not happening.
We're the world champions, if you remember. And I'm definitely not going to let that one happen. Honorable mentions, though. Gari had a bit of a horror game one with his debut. But then came back on the Akali and was actually playing extraordinarily well. I think this is a champion with a lot of skill expression, which is why we're sort of highlighting her. And we didn't have very much Gwen played. We did. I have a few games, but I don't know whether it was necessarily like the whole mechanics demonstration of Gwen. It was just her snipping people to what? Death.
I think actually, like, one of the biggest things about Gwen that nobody talks about is her mist is actually super strong.
What? Oh, it's busted.
Oh, yes. What do you mean? Like, that's the reason why she can't.
Yeah. Well, the Korean commentators were like, talking about this, or the Korean analysts were talking about this on the desk about how, like, they thought Gwen was picked as a counter to Rumble. I wouldn't go, like, that far, but it really helps you, like, advance into a team fight. You're basically safe as you're approaching a fight like that, so I think Gwen is super strong right now. I think a lot of people are focused on Akali because looks cool, big damage, etc. Lots of numbers.
And everyone's had so much practice on her too, right?
Yeah.
Like everyone has sort of been able to put in those grinding hours. And so you can see that like the level of mechanical prowess of a lot of our players is up there.
Yeah, but I also feel like the real lesson that we've learned over this week is that both Akali and Gwen are incredibly overtuned, and the level of skill expression needed isn't really, like, I think that the highlight plays are still highlight worthy, like Khan's presence of mind to like when he goes in, when he goes out, that weaving factor is really, really cool. But both Gwen and Akali are also so strong that you don't necessarily need to make those big out plays. Like the power level of those champions is just kind of off the charts. Yeah. But
there's also that Riftmaker item that's it's pretty good.
Yeah. He expressed his skill by dumpstering the top lane over and over. That's how he did it with Gwen. It didn't matter what champion he was playing.
It was like everything.
Didn't matter the champion. So it like has nothing really to do with Gwen, although, you know, she is pretty good in the lane as well. But like it was basically just Keen getting so far ahead, and then he just ran at the enemy. And that, miss and did whatever he wanted, you know? It's an insane champion.
It was very frustrating to watch when you feel like you can feel that moment where you've got your opponent down to a certain like health threshold and you're like, I've done the calculations. I can go in there and I can get this kill. And then the resulting fight is Gwen at full health and you dead. Like,
yeah.
Not to mention that she can split push insanely fast. She can get in the side lane, take out a turret, take out two turrets if not dealt with. Like, just really, really strong champion right now. And in team fighting, in split pushing, and also like pseudo support that she offers your team in terms of approaching a team fight, it's actually insane. Like, I think that she will be nerfed. I think there's no question about that. But I don't think she's great in every scenario. I feel like she's not like a must pick first. You have to figure out how your composition is going to work before you pick her.
Is it going to be Gwen nerfs, though, or is it going to be just Riftmaker nerfs? Because I think Riftmaker is just a little bit too strong after the buffs.
I think they might tune down Riftmaker a little bit, but I think Gwen will definitely be looked at. Like, for example, Akali, you know, probably could stay the same. And if you think about some of the item nerfs that can come in there with the Riftmaker, like, she might get toned down. But I don't think you look at the Riftmaker as being like, okay, we solved Gwen because we tuned this item down. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, I think the Mist also does need a little bit of a look at. How about you, Chronicle?
Yeah, so for Gwen, I think the amount of free stats that she gets is just like it's a Riot special. Remember Camille and how much more she used to have, right? Like it's a Camille situation, right? Where there's so many random, like, why does she get so much random attack speed from her E? Like, why does she have as much sustain as she does? Why does everything proc her passive? I also disagree. I think Akali has now again got to do the point where you can basically blind her. And if Akali is blindable, that means that the champion needs to be straight back into the gutter. Because, like, I think it's okay if it's a good flex pick. But Akali has a history of being so oppressive when you can just blind her and take her in any matchup, which is where she is at the moment.
But I just think that one of the main reasons why Akali is back with such a vengeance is likely the Riftmaker being so strong.
I don't even think Riftmaker's most broken item at the moment. I think that's Divine Sunderer.
Like, oh, right. That's a different conversation.
Just because there's one item that's broken doesn't mean there's a bunch of them that are also broken.
Riftmaker is currently, it's broken on two champions. That's Akali and Gwen.
True.
Like, because Rumble doesn't, like, Rumble can take it. We saw it, like, what happened once or twice, but generally Rumble goes for Night Harvester or Proto Belt. Like, it's just those two. I don't think Riftmaker is the problem. I think it's just those two.
I build it on Mordekaiser.
Yeah, but, you know, Mordekaiser,
that's
outside
not
of
a
his,
champion,
outside of
actually,
his upper,
right now.
Project Mordekaiser is a cool enough skin that you can pick him up.
Actually, yeah, that skin's actually kind of broken. Yeah. I think that's probably going to do it for us. Thank you so much for watching the first episode back. I hope you guys are enjoying the new format. It's been really cool. I'm just like, I like having like the one episode like every time, but like being able to do every episode with all of us is just absolutely awesome. So really, really looking forward to what we're going to have coming up in the next couple of weeks. So thank you so much for watching. And make sure you follow us and everything like that on Twitter. We do have Pogstate on Twitter. We've got, of course, LCK Global's YouTube channel that you can chuck a subscription. And, of course, whichever way you are listening based on audio, which I hope Ian will put down here somewhere around as far as like where we can get it. Maybe it's up here. Maybe it's over there. I don't know. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you in the next episode.